Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.
Perfection is similar to balance. It's a very worthy pursuit in life, and I think the best in any field are always chasing it, but they never reach it, and they know they'll never reach it, but it doesn't deter them from trying to go find it, right?
On this episode of the Rising Coaches podcast, we're joined by Jordan McCabe, assistant coach at Grand Canyon University. McCabe started his playing career at a young age with early success that carried through his time at West Virginia and UNLV, where he became known for his high-level feel for the game and leadership on the floor. He has since transitioned into coaching, with stops at West Virginia, Green Bay, and now Grand Canyon, where he continues to make a strong impact, particularly in player development. In this episode, we discuss how he builds individualized development plans for his players, the key lessons he's taken from working under different coaching styles throughout his journey, and advice for coaches and players navigating the modern game and social media in today's basketball landscape.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Rising Coaches podcast. Your host, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, here today. We're excited to talk some hoops, chop it up. Good friend over here, the assistant coach, GCU Grand Canyon University. Ladies and gentlemen, Jordan McCabe. Coach McCabe, welcome.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it. Excited to be here.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. Thank you.
Might be the first time I ever called you Coach McCabe, so that will...
I'm rolling into year four, and I think I've just started to be comfortable with that. The first 3 years, it took me by shock a little bit from players. So no problem.
It's weird. Sometimes you just like, no, don't call me, but then you kind of have to. I get that.
You eventually strike a middle path and mm-hmm. It won't be like Coach McKay, but it won't be Jordan. It'll become something easy and simple like J-Mac.
No, yeah, there you go. Right, I'd love J-Mac work.
Like players started calling me Mage became my nickname. Yeah. Instead of saying Major or Coach Major, they just say Mage. And so I'm like, all right, that's fine. Because you try to, I don't know, sometimes this thing can almost get too formal and you'd rather it be relational than formal.
Yeah.
And then it feels more like a partnership and then the NBA, they use first names. Like the Michigan players would call him Dusty.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't have an issue with it, especially in the new world of NIL. I was a young assistant coach. Some guys were older than me. So I'm like, this is peer to peer at this point. So we can go with first names. Unless we're in a group setting, just give me the nod of coach. I'm trying to get this thing rolling on my professional side.
Right. But no.
Not only.
I'm sure the Pistons call JB. They probably call him JB. Yeah. So it's just a different – I think everybody's got to find the comfort level because it's what happens after the salutations that's really important as opposed to the salutations itself. So
you got into the profession as the youngest – at the time, youngest Division I assistant coach in the country, which is, first off, that's remarkable because we always talk about people's past, their careers, how they grew, develop into the manager, the Dobo, and so on and so forth. My guy just said, no, I'm going straight for the assistant coach right out the gates. But you obviously have a lot of great experiences, unique experiences, and a unique perspective, I would say. Being known nationally at a young age, first things first. Young Jordan McCabe, Ellen DeGeneres, so, right? You get millions on social media. So it's like you already had a platform already, but which is great. And that's something I think now, the reason I bring it up is because it's relevant nowadays with players, social media being a lot larger of a scale than it ever was. Mm-hmm. Like those experiences, getting all of that really helps shape your perspective of mentoring people now throughout this NIL, being able to help them get through something relatively similar.
Yeah. I think social media is probably a little bit too relevant right now within the basketball and sports space. I think every guy and girl who get into at least the basketball side of things has dreams of becoming the best version and player of them that they can be of themselves. All those dreams look a little different. I don't think that I was completely understanding of how much time and energy went into the stuff off the court compared to what I really wanted was my dreams on the court to come true. I think there's a really tough balance there. I'm also not telling everybody they need to delete their social media and go live off the grid. Like I don't think that's the right thing either, but you see a lot of guys being told, build your brand. I'd like you to just be a really good basketball player and be who you are, and the brand will create itself. And when I was younger and when it initially started, Ball's Life and Overtime started to become big brands themselves as I was coming up. I tell everybody, any follower that I got or amassed, whatever, it wasn't like the Paul Brothers route of we're going to release this many videos and do this many things and do this crazy viral clip. It had nothing to do with that. I was just obsessed with basketball. I played that was just who I was and how I played. And because of that, naturally happened where I just kind of hit it at a lucky time. I guess lucky or unlucky, it depends on how you view it. But yeah, then I gained some notoriety and some attention as a player. And dealing with that is tough. So Doug, to long-windedly, I told you guys I'd talk way too much, answer your question here. It does give me a little bit of a unique perspective for young players coming through the NIL era of college basketball and how to handle all those things.
Yeah. Two things. One, how did it humble you? Because you go from, obviously, you're coming into college basketball with this idea of coaching versus the reality of it.
Yep.
And I'm guessing there's a gap between what you didn't know and what you found out.
Yeah.
And that had to be probably humbling to a degree. So kind of hit on that, but then hit on the second piece of what kind of lesson can you share with young kids about social media from the standpoint of they have a choice to make, right? There's a difference between perception and your true craft.
Yeah.
Right. And if you're portraying yourself as something, what are you really?
Yeah.
Right. And so you had a come to, you know what, truth deal about it.
Yeah.
But then what kind of lessons can you share with them? Make sure you're really living what you're portraying versus putting on this show.
Yeah.
And then being something somewhere else.
Yeah, no, definitely had a few different come to Jesus moments through college as a player and as a coach. They still occur quite often. And humility and being humbled is part of the game as a player and a coach. And I think being open to that is so important. And I think as a player, just realizing how small your margin of error can be at times when you're competing for minutes at the highest level. I played for Bob Huggins at West Virginia. I look back and I don't think you really respect until you get to that level as a player, how good those around you are. And then there's another level past that I never got to reach as an NBA player that now watching it and being around those guys, you realize how obsessed they truly are with the craft and the game itself. I think the most humbling thing for me is I never, or maybe I did realize, but it was too late, that I needed to zoom out on the game of basketball. I was in the gym constantly. I don't believe anybody put more time in than me, but what I was working on, what I was approaching my daily habits with, wasn't the right thing. And let me try to just simplify it. I just wasn't obsessed with the game of basketball. I was obsessed with how do I individually get better within that game, but I didn't think the game. And I think a lot of players turn coaches have that moment at some point where they're like, man, I wish I could go back right now and play because I was so blinded to my own performance that I wasn't realizing the bigger picture here as a game. And that's who the best players are. Like I look back at Deuce McBride, who I got a chance to play with at West Virginia, who's now on the Knicks. But Deuce was ultra competitive. And I'm like, I'm ultra competitive. He was in the gym all the time. I'm in the gym all the time. All that stuff's great. What separated Deuce, other than some of the things that you see him do in the NBA now, but he's obsessed with every aspect of the game and how to get better at all of it. He's so worried about the other four pieces on the floor with him, or call it the other nine, that he was thinking in a way different way than most players do. And that's obsessing over Did my last shot go in? Did I make a play? Is coach trusting enough? Is he going to play me on Tuesday? No, Deuce never worried about that. He was so obsessed, and he still is, with the game itself. And I think a lot of players miss that simple fact. You got to stay in the gym. You got to work really hard. But ultimately, you need to be watching and thinking of the game as a whole and becoming obsessed with that and how to become more efficient in every small area. So that was probably the biggest thing for me, and that's what I try to get through to players. But coach, you probably tell me that's a lifelong trying to get through to players.
Yeah, it's a constant lily pad hop from one humbling moment to the next. But obviously, if you blend them into your journey the right way, then you forget the experience, but you remember the lesson. Because sometimes the experience itself isn't so great, but it's what are you pulling from it that really helps you? But then part two of that, just from a social media perspective, is there a lesson that you try to share with players now in terms of how to approach it the right way, right? Because it can either own you or you own it.
Yep.
And how do you help them strike that balance? Because you were right in the middle of that yourself.
Yeah. No, so part two of that, from a social media perspective, I like to be really careful because I have this issue with listening to podcasts, not only about basketball, but about just life in general, and hearing blanket statement advice and assuming that works for me. So what my goal is on this podcast is to tell, whether it's coaches or kids listening, social media specifically, I think everybody's different. There's guys who, Jared McCain's a great example. He's got one of the biggest followings. And I remember people saying he's doing it in high school. He won't be able to do it at the college level. He'll have to shut all that down and become a monk of the game of basketball. Well, that's not how Jared McCain plays his best basketball. He likes to be free and loose and entertain and be who he is. And that's amazing. And he was able to do it at Duke. And then everybody said he won't be able to do it in the NBA. They won't allow. Now we have entire teams from the Thunder and Jared himself and so many other guys doing different things. So my advice with social media is do whatever makes you happy and comfortable with it. Don't do something assuming that you're supposed to be building your brand. You're supposed to be starting a podcast. You're supposed to be whatever on social media. Don't make it that serious of a thing. If it works for you, it works for you. There's a guy on the Nuggets, and I'm sorry, I forget his name. I'll find it. But I just tried to get on LinkedIn and just start looking on there. And he's got great content coming out from him. You can tell it is from him every day, right? So he likes to do that. That's great. Jared's on TikTok and YouTube and all this stuff. Great. The Thunder, clearly it works for them, right? I don't think it's the reason they're winning the NBA championship, but I don't think it hurts them. So yeah, I think my advice for each guy is you're different. You're a different human. And I can't advise don't do it at all or go all in and create your brand. You're going to have to find, you keep saying balance. And that's the beautiful thing we're all trying to chase that none of us will ever find.
Right? Yeah.
That's my thing.
Yeah. Said.
But that's phenomenal though, because you're 100% right. You see something on social media and you'll be like, okay, I can do this. But then in reality, if I went out there and start working on floaters, that is not my forte and not my game. Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, what's the purpose and what's the point? And that's not going to bring any help to the team. Granted, I know I'm not playing anymore, but you going back to the humbling part, I got to say real quick, I thought about this the other day. First time I go out in the high school. Now, I'm in no way comparing our playing history and successes, right? You won a state championship. I just won a district championship. But I remember first time in high school, a couple newspapers started writing my name and stuff. And not many guys are 6'8" in the area. So I was a little above in that part. I go out first time in AAU. I see a 7-footer. This kid's going up dunking on people. I'm like, there is levels to this. But I was so pigeonholed into my area that I really thought, oh, there was something more. And then I started to realize, come the Jesus moment, and I'm like, oh, crap. Okay, there is more to this.
Yeah, there is. There are levels to it. There are levels to it.
But then the development side, the one thing that I know, I see you still post up now, and that's awesome. But like, even with the player development, just overall, that is great. So like, how do you work with your individual prior athletes that you worked with, the current guys that you have now, just people you work with over the time, helping develop them? How do you know what drills are good for what athletes? How do you know how to prioritize it for who? And then how do you come up with like certain workouts for each person?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And that's a work in progress constantly. I think where I've moved to two big things when it comes to player development and being on the floor with guys. Number one, bones over cones. I'm not saying anything novel there. I think it's really important, especially as a young guy myself, but also trying to get our managers and GAs who want to be on the floor with our guys in front of them and trying to emulate what the best in the world do. And Kyrie came in while he was rehabbing this year. They were in our facility and it was him and five guys. And all five guys were on the floor in their defensive positions while he played essentially one-on-one with his, just so you can understand time and space. So I grew up in the era of it's all about reps, and reps will always win for sure. But there's also guys, if you each did 1,000 reps, but one of you did it on air and one of you did it with a player who's actually making you anticipate and feel and bump and all those things, I think that's more important. Now, we don't all have access to that, especially what level you are and where you are. So reps ultimately are the thing that matter. But bones over cones is the first one. And then the second piece of it is trying to put them in game situations. So the second layer of that is not telling them exactly what the bones are going to do. If I'm in front of you, I may do one of two, three different things. And you got to read, react, stay on balance and all those things so that we can have our repetitions feel the most like they'll feel in a game as possible. I thought watching Shaka Smart's practice at Marquette last year, it was my favorite practice I've ever watched in my young career as a coach or my playing career. And one of the things that they did was everything was a competition. There was a winner and a loser team in every single drill. They did one-on-one. I think it was two dribbles from the elbow, different directions. They put the defender at a disadvantage. Every single rep that those guys got, even if let's say they got six reps right there, and because they go quick, might be 2.5 minutes. Maybe each guy got six reps, three defense, three offense. I think those are more valuable than doing 60 reps on air. So those are the two different things that I try to implement as much as I can. I think there's layers to each workout and some of it has to be on air, right? Where vitamins, sharpening, whatever, that's great. You got to move into the next layers for guys to really see progress in practice and in games. Because if they don't see that, they won't keep coming back to you. They won't ask you to work out anymore. Yeah. It's not translating.
Yeah. No, I love that. The balance between like reps and live play, and just you're just trying to get them constantly, especially when you throw a bone out there over a cone.
Yeah.
Is what is it like to feel the game?
Yeah.
100%. And you're trying to constantly get them, whether it's a pick and roll situation, whether it's a drive and kick situation, whether it's a big playing off the dunker and finishing against, here's a guy coming, finishing versus verticality or whatever it is, right? Making the rim your friend, right? And going for a reverse layup or just call it whatever you want, but it's just getting them to feel the game. And because the game is always going to be full of, I won't say surprises, but there's always something coming. And you're just trying to get them to understand what it's like to drive in traffic before it's time to drive.
No doubt. And to feel that. I think the one other big piece of why that matters is because, like I told you, my playing career and where I pull from was filled with one-on-one workouts. I was in the gym by myself all the time. It became a sanctuary like it is for just about any basketball player. That's great. The problem with that is, now retrospectively looking back, is I didn't win and lose enough until it came time to practice or in the game. So there was definitely this creep of, as you elevate levels, right? I had zero fear of failure at a certain point in my career. I had zero fear of losing, right? I got to a caliber of player where you lose more often than you did maybe in high school. Now you're in college. If I would have did more of that, like realizing, I forget the percentage and which tennis player said it. I'm going to butcher it, but somebody will find it. I think it's like maybe 53% or something like that. And it's Nadal or Djokovic. Clearly I'm not a tennis guy, but one of the best in the world said, that's the percentage. 53% is the percentage of points I won in my career. That's it. So I lost 47%. And you can go into the baseball analogy and all this stuff. But I didn't lose enough. And when you put bones out there, whether it's other players or GAs or managers, and we turn this into a competition like they did at Marquette, you feel that, right? So you understand what it is and you become more comfortable with failure. You become more comfortable with making the right move, but not finishing. and not having that cringe embarrassment of that. And that's a real thing for players. They don't get that. You don't get that in an on-air workout, right? You can sharpen your fundamentals, but ultimately at the end of the day, the lights are going to go on. People are going to watch, and it's you versus him, right? And right, whether it's 53% or whatever the best basketball players in the world, we talk about analytics all the time. The edge and the margins, like I said, are so small that you're going to lose a lot. You got to learn how to fail and lose and miss. And I don't think you don't get that same thing when it's on air.
Yeah. And recover.
Or with a chair.
Or with a chair. And I did a lot of chair workouts. I promise. I've come off probably 20 million chair ball screens. I promise you. And it helped, but there's another level, yeah. Like Doug said earlier. And now, like you said as well, like there's levels to it.
Yeah. No. And just to, again, who are you after you fail?
Yeah. I
mean, that's as rich as whatever they're going through, whatever the drill or setup or concept may be that you're trying to get across is,
yeah,
how quickly can you accept a message and then turn the page,
yeah,
and get to the next thing? Or are you carrying the future? Or are you carrying the past 4 reps later?
Yeah.
So it really helps you learn how they learn and how, yes, they get themselves off the mat when they make mistakes. In addition to just the basketball stuff, it really gives you some rich learning ground for who you're dealing with, especially right, when you first start working with somebody. It teaches you a lot about them.
Yeah, it does.
And not to be afraid. And eventually you can say, don't be afraid of it, right? Make a mistake, make your friend. Now, this thing is your friend.
Yeah, the best players in the world, I think that's what separates them, is when you watch them, it's hard to quantify as a coach. That guy almost doesn't care. I don't know if you've ever tried to verbalize or articulate that to a player, but the overthinker, you're like, watch, pick any Shay, right? He doesn't care. And you don't want to say he doesn't care because he's obsessed and cares so much about the game, but he doesn't care about the micro failure or the miss or the whatever. He's not over. He's just playing. He's reading, reacting, and whatever happens. And then over the course of a game, he comes out on top. So trying to articulate that is tough, but it's a real thing.
The failure that has happened so many times and the amount of times you fail at it, then you become used to being able to fail out and you learn the ins and outs, how to escape it. It's, yep, basically like the first thing I think of is, okay, I saw this the other day on social media. I saw somebody was working on a Rajon Rondo. They came to a two-step. He faked the pass back this way and then would go up to the layup. And in the middle of the paint, and I'm thinking, I'm like, Rondo can do that because he has this phenomenal passing ability and he can get the ball wherever he wants at any time he wants. The kid, high school kid that you're working on this with, he doesn't have the same respect. Rondo has respect for the defense. It's going to be like, okay, I got to guard this guy and draw two people. That high school kid probably doesn't have that same respect. That same move is going to be completely irrelevant. And this kid's going to be trying to do something that's just doesn't make sense.
Yes. 1,000%. We try to jump to XYZ way too many times, especially in youth sports. And we don't work on, I had the privilege of working with Jason Otter, and I tell any parent or kid that I run into, I think Jason does a really good job. I'm clearly biased, but he starts with A, B, and C and the fundamental of everything in terms of movement patterns. And okay, we're working on Rondos and we get there all the time, but the kid doesn't get there 3 tournaments in a row. He never even gets to the rim. It's because his first step mechanics are horrible. He's got a ton of wasted motion, right? He's not shifting the defense, all those things that start way before that. And the kid's wondering, oh, why am I wasting my time doing this move? I agree with you, Doug. I think there's a lot of skipping steps at times, especially in youth basketball.
Yeah. Now, it's definitely something that I guess you don't know until I would have been the first one to try and pull YouTube clips and try and work kids out. But now after starting to talk to people and understanding it, like you just don't know until you actually know.
Yeah, no doubt.
But one thing I want to make sure to cover on too is your coaching career, right? Obviously, this is implemented into that, but I know you're strong in the development side. That's something that has a lot of, or that you know a lot of, and you have a lot of background in. But with the coaching side, you've been in coaching now for 3 years, so going into your 4th season. So yeah, it's great to be able to see. I know you've seen different areas, been in different programs, and all great programs. What's the one thing, I always like to ask, the welcome to coaching moment, your first year, okay? It could be any year because you've been in different programs, but what's the first year you're like, oh, crap, I was not prepared for this. It hits you.
It was what would have been probably, so it was year 1, And the quick story of how I got there was I played for Coach Huggins at West Virginia. He got me a job back there at West Virginia when I was finished playing. 2 weeks later, things hit the fan. And I was only retained because the interim coach, Josh Eilert, he and I have a great relationship to this day, but we had one prior when I was a player and he was on staff there. He took over and he had a ton of faith in me. And I'd have to ask him now, was it a lot of faith or was it interim staff? How many coaches would take it? And Jordan's just always around and I need a fifth assistant. So, hey, but all that in all seriousness, Josh deserves a lot of credit because for me and where I'm at right now today in my coaching career, because I can guarantee I wouldn't be there without him, not only from giving me a job, but who he is as a person and a coach. All that being said, the welcome to coaching moment was that year we welcomed the Houston Cougars into the Big 12 conference. And the schedule comes out in the fall and we circle the game. We're going to open conference play with Houston. Okay, so this is their welcome to the Big 12 moment. And the Big 12 conference was very nice to us. They said, you guys can go to Houston to do that. Okay, so we're going to do this.
How nice.
Great. Yeah. So we had a tough year. We had lost, five players to some of the best programs in the country when Coach Huggins left the program. And Coach Eilert and the entire staff worked their butt off to do everything that they could to get us prepared. But that league, you can have 100 years of coaching experience and the best players in the country, and it's a coin flip every night, right? So we go down to Houston, and I describe that game to people kind of as a boxer, which I never was, but I would assume when you're outmatched to a point when you hear the bell ring, and the last thing you remember is the bell ringing, and then everything kind of goes fuzzy after that. And 40 minutes of gameplay later, I remember just not feeling like you had as a coach. I didn't know what to give them, what to tell them other than just keep going. We got to get, there's some games where if we're being really honest and we strip down all the politically correct talk, you're just trying to get through it and survive and get to the next. Kelvin Sampson's defense was exactly that. It was a buzzsaw of a game. You were so excited to get an open look, but you were also so tired from trying to get that open look for 12 straight minutes that you missed it. And then it was like this, the psychology of their defense and what it does to teams might be needed to be studied more than just what they're physically doing out there, because it takes everything out of you. That was the welcome to coaching moment. Oh my goodness. You think you know what you're doing as a coach and you're a player going to be a coach. And you're like, I can't be that hard. I don't know why they're always so stressed out. And you realize that guy on the other sideline, that guy on the other sideline has reached savant level coaching. And then you don't realize what that means until you play against it. And there's been more than just that game that's woken me up to that understanding. But that was a tough one. So I still, whoever schedules for the Big 12 at some point in my career, I'll cross paths with them and have a real good conversation. How messed up that was to send us to Houston in game one.
Don't know if I've heard their defense described better than that, but yeah, you're right. It's a sigh of relief when you get an open look. And not we ain't even talking about a ball going in.
No, just open look. You feel
this
great.
That's a small celebration when you score, but you just don't. It's very hard to know what you're going to get against them.
As the game unfolds,
it just, unless you're able just to have a couple of guys that are really good off the bounce that can make them pay, or you can make them just keep fouling you somehow because of that. And then you can get to the foul line, but no, that's as good as you could describe it. And it goes from the bell ringing as a boxer to your head ringing. That's the next bell you hear. That's almost like that.
Great enough.
No doubt.
Yeah. Bouncing off the mat. It was a rough one, but I'm happy to say we're not the only program that's went through that.
Yeah. They do that too.
There's a few coaches out there listening like I played against Houston. I get it.
No question.
I get it.
No, but I'm sure, especially as a first year assistant coach, that gave you a lot of things to learn from, right? That's the one thing I like to reiterate to people too, is not even necessarily the first year, but the years that you have the up and downs. I feel like now being at Chatham for this will go in, four seasons. We've had a lot of good seasons. We've had four championships in 4 years. So it's obviously going great. I'm not trying to brag, but of course, right? But But with that success, I feel like you are consistent with the same thing. And so you just do the same thing every year and it works consistently. Obviously, you got to implement new players and find different ways to be unique with them. But if you're on a flow, you keep the flow going. The years when it's up and down is, I really think, where you learn the most, because you see what does not work, what does work, how to, okay, you have to think of different strategies. This is not working. So we got to find something that will make it work. So I feel like those years probably helped you. I don't want to speak for you, but probably helped you learn the most.
Yeah. No, it absolutely did. I was just in Memphis for the UIBL and I got a chance to bother Ben McCollum for an entire game. I don't think he would have asked for it, but it didn't matter. I was going to stand next to him and ask him a bunch of questions. And one of the things that stood out about his journey as a head coach was how retrospective he was. And I think as a coach and as a human being, it's very easy to just get lost in the loop and the constantness of life that you don't look back. In the military, they call them after action reviews, AARs. So I try to use those as much as I can, but I'll use them even more after my conversation with Coach McCollum and just his way of viewing every single year. Like you said, Doug, even off a championship, what worked, what didn't, what can we pull out of, what can we eliminate, what can we add that'll help us get better going forward. We talked about balance a lot, but what I think and what I took from that conversation was perfection is similar to balance. It's a very worthy pursuit in life. And I think the best in any field are always chasing it, but they never reach it. And they know they'll never reach it, but it doesn't deter them from trying to go find it, right? So the perfection for him may look different than other coaches, but he's chasing it by looking back at the great run that they had this year, his run at Drake in Northwest Missouri. But he was talking about his first 2 years as a head coach and it not being what it is now, and having to just trust it and look back and figure out, what am I going to eliminate? But what am I going to stand on and say, no matter what our record says, I trust this part of our program and I'm going to let time do its thing and not wholesale change. Because that was another thing my first year as a coach and still learning now is, what do you believe in so wholeheartedly that you won't change no matter the outcome? And I thought that's what Coach Huggins was phenomenal at as a head coach. Playing for him, I got to see there are certain things defensively, and I'm sure Kelvin's the same way and other great defenses are this way, we're just not going to budge on. And if you can't get there, you're in the wrong program. That doesn't mean I don't love you, but it's just, that's who we are, right? And that's similar to, I'm sure Coach McCollum would talk about some of the things that they do defensively and offensively. Like, we're not going to budge on this. This is who we are. This is what we do. All that being said, he's still going back and trying to get better. So as a young guy, it's, man, and you're chasing some of the best coaches in the country. It's super fun being young and seeing how far away you are from coaches that I just mentioned, whether it's Huggs or Coach Sampson or Coach McCollum. It's great. It's amazing to hear that there's guys at that level still just reaching for perfection, trying to find it, knowing they never will. That's okay.
Man, and that's crazy too. That's a great, absolutely great way to put it. But you always think, when you're that young, naive assistant, right? Yeah. You always think, oh, I could take over as a head coach tomorrow. And then I'm at the point now where I'm like, I'll be the first one to say, 5 years ago, I probably thought I could do it. Now looking at it, I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess you don't know until, but you know. There's a lot of things that you got to think about and a lot of moving parts. That's a great way to put it though.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can be that the balance for me is, what are we trying to balance? For me, it's constantly, and this is just how I'm wired and how I was raised. The balance for me is trying to figure out how to take my ego that tells me I can do anything at any level with anybody and balance that with, I know absolutely freaking nothing. And that's where I am trying to find that. It's like the cylinder with the board on top. Like, that's life. You're never perfectly still. You're always trying to move back and forth.
Right.
Some days when we come back from Houston, you got to remind yourself who you are and what you can do, and your players, who they are and what they can do. But when you're riding high, there's got to be this humility that says, I still know nothing and I'll be chasing perfection that I'll never touch for the rest of my career. So that's that pivot and the balance that you never reach, and you're rocking back and forth.
Yeah, no, I think everybody's got to find that for themselves, right? You go to any park full of kids, and what you just described is right in front of our faces, and two kids on a seesaw.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
The seesaw never sits still.
Nope.
There's never a point. The only time when it sits still is when nobody's on it.
Right.
But when two people are on it, that thing is constantly in flux, right?
Yes.
And what makes the seesaw work is these two people got to figure out how do we make this work for each other. Well, right. Individually, you got to figure out that balance of sometimes the balance, like you said, is ego versus humility. That's the balance, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just the general office home balance for a guy that's got a family and then he's trying to, so he's got to figure that out, or she.
Yeah.
Right. What's their seesaw look like to where they can balance it and get it as close to where it's not as shaky as it, they know it's going to be. But the seesaw is never sitting still.
Yeah.
And I think every person's got to have that conversation with themselves in the mirror. What is that? What's that look like for me? And then if you figure that out for yourself, then that is sometimes balance is just make it's the effort.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to strike it. You're not going to hit that bullseye.
Never.
But the best effort, that in itself is can be a reward once you figure what that looks like. And everybody's got to figure out what that looks like for themselves.
Yeah, no doubt. And you need that reminder every now and then as like high achieving drivers, which most coaches are, that you'll never reach it. And it's a good reminder every now and then, because I think you get lost thinking there's going to be a click at some point and everything's going to like, you just hit a flow state. And I don't believe that you ever arrive there. And if you do, you should be scared, because that's not, I don't think that's
yeah, because where do you go from there?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Yeah, so,
no doubt.
Man, I got to say the one thing, being at one point a youngest assistant in the profession, and I'm sure I said, I don't know about being a head coach anytime soon, but I know, damn, it's around the corner for you. Obviously there's a, and again, I don't want to jump ahead and of course be happy where you are. We preach that all the time. So I'm not trying to jump ahead of things, but I know we say it all the time. So I got to make sure to reiterate, but I know there's some big doors opening up here probably at some point in the near future. So excited for that for you.
No, I appreciate it. And that's, once again, Doug, you just said it, you guys preach being present. And McCollum said that during the game as an assistant at Northwest Missouri, he had to be present and learn that's important. But you're always preparing for what your ultimate goal is, and that was to be a head coach. That can sneak up on you if you're not preparing yourself and becoming ready, but not, once again, don't spend all 24 hours preparing to be a head coach when you're an assistant coach who's got to figure out how to be the best assistant coach. So once again, it's the equation that doesn't ever really balance or make sense, but you got to keep chasing it. You got to keep chasing it. But I appreciate that, Doug. And I do hope that happens.
Yeah, no, it's coming, man. But like you said, you tell yourself what you tell your guys in skill development, right? Don't skip steps.
Don't skip steps. Don't do it.
Yep. We have to, if we don't skip steps as coaches, and we all have our next thing that we can get better at, just like players do. And we all have that same time in the off season, just like players do.
Yep.
And we all have to challenge ourselves to come back with one or two things in August or September, just like players do.
Yep.
If we model that, then that gives us the best chance to stay on this continually developing arc, just like we want players to.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Because our benefit is for them in the first place. You're not going to develop yourself here in the summer and go hide it under a rock.
Right.
You got 15 guys that you want to and benefit off that and come
100%
summer and then into the fall. So if they're always the reason for our wanting to be at our best and do our best and give our best, then it's just, I can't describe it. The game itself kind of finds a way to let you know when it's your time. It just does.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. No doubt.
And I don't want to know the mystery to that. That will ruin it.
Exactly.
I'd rather not know. Yeah. Jay, no, man, this has been awesome, brother. Thank you.
I was going to say, I just got to ask one more question and then we'll let you go from there. But really just, you started out as a young coach, as we have referenced. I know this is obviously still going into your fourth season, so you're still younger in the profession. But if there was any advice that maybe you would have for somebody starting in the profession or potentially getting into it early, what's the best advice you give your younger self starting all over again?
Man, that's a great question. I feel like I'm so close to that point in time where I could probably still use whatever advice I'm about to come up with right now. I think it's similar to what we talked about to being a player. What I failed to realize as a player is what I hope I don't fail to realize as a coach. And that's to zoom out and see the whole picture of what we're trying to do. And as a player, you're worried about how you individually perform when you should be worried about how the team wins the game. And then I think as a coach, you become, how does the team, you get obsessed with how the team wins the game, and you don't zoom out to what am I doing to the players in my program? How am I affecting them? How am I transforming them as human beings going on? How do I not get lost in just trying to win games compared to, yeah, don't get me wrong, I'm the most competitive person in the world. I want to win every game for sure. But ultimately, when those players leave, what effect did I have on them in my X amount of years that I got with them and the time that I got? Trying to really make sure, all that being said, my one sentence of advice for younger coaches is start with the relationship. Start with the relationship and have those initial uncomfortable conversations. Because even as a coach, I thought then my conversations on a daily basis outside of the lines with players would be easier. But they're not. They're still uncomfortable. There's still intros. There's still that feeling of trying to get to know somebody that some coaches just say, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to focus on, like I said, trying to win basketball games. But each kid in your program, every one of those 15 players is somewhere that you need to go meet them. And you won't know where that is unless you sit down with them, you take the extra time to, whether it's walking to and from class with them, they're going to hate it. They're going to want to put their AirPods in and walk to class without coach next to me, but you're going to have to break through that barrier. And I think that's part of your job as a coach to try to connect. I had the privilege of sitting down with a coach that was an assistant for me as a player who was now on a Final Four staff. I'm going to give a shout out to him. Brandon Chappelle was at UNLV with me. Then he was at Texas and now he's at Arizona. And he is exactly what I just described. Now we did it on the floor in terms of building a relationship, but outside of practice for the NCAA compliance out there, we stayed within our hours, but we just, Coach Chappelle and I spent 30 minutes on the floor every morning, standing appointment is what he said. And we'd talk. Some days we wouldn't even work out. We just talk. And it could be about relationships in life, to school, to what's next for me as a human. And I felt like he knew who I was. So I trusted him innately. So during a game, during the most heated moments, if I was drifting, there was one person on that staff that could grab me and bring me back, and it was him. And it was not because he knew the best drills, it was because he knew who I was, like, at the core as a human being. So I think my advice is I said I'd answer with one sentence, and there it is. Start with the relationship. The sentence is start with the relationship and work from there. So I think that's really important. And then go look up the Dunning-Kruger effect. If you're a young coach who thinks they know everything, as I was and still am some days, look up the Dunning-Kruger effect in psychology and understand that's what we just talked about now for 47 minutes. All wrapped up in one.
The Dunning-Kruger. I don't even know about that one. Okay. I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah, no, that's good. I love it. No, great stuff, brother. This is so good. You basically, in this pod, kind of summarize why Doug and I try to take the approach of actions versus journeys. You can get actions anywhere. You can go to a million different, you can just literally spend so 24 hours straight on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can get actions anywhere. No. Can't get journeys everywhere.
No.
And that's why when people come on here, we want people listening to feel where people have been. Yeah. And you can't nerd out on that for 24 hours on Instagram. You got to come to places like here. And what we're trying to do is humanize this profession and let people know it's bigger than just actions. Nothing against actions. I love it. I copy paste stuff, text stuff to myself from IG all the time. Just did it 4 times this morning. But let's always remember what's important is getting to each player, meeting each player where they are. And like you said, take it from there, man. So this was solid gold, brother. We appreciate it.
I appreciate solid you gold. Guys having me on. Appreciate it.
Jay, I want to say two things real quick before we wrap it up. And number one, So this guy, Mage, this guy took me under his wing for a weekend. It was basically a bring your child to work day because he's running around. I was fortunate as ever, like him and his, at the time it was fiance, or no, at the time it was your girlfriend. And then fast forward. So obviously I want to say congratulations. I know it's been a while. Congrats to you and Liv for your marriage. And that's awesome. And good for you guys. But Mage, this guy took me underneath his wing for a day. I got to go to WVU practices. I stayed at his place for a little bit. And that was my actually getting to see things from the other side. That was before we even really had this podcast going. So it was cool and it was unique to be able to kind of see it from there. And to, I just wanted to always tell you, like, I know I told you enough times there, but thank you. Because this dude was working every second. He's like, I got a recruit here. He's going 100 different directions. He's got so much on his plate. Then he's got this dude sitting back at his apartment waiting and chilling. So it was, but it was a great experience to be able to see things. So thanks for that. That was, it truly was awesome.
Absolutely. I don't know if it's bring your, whatever you said to work day. Because
bring your child to work day.
We both showed up knowing absolutely nothing. They were like, how did they get the key card access to this gym? And to this day, Ren Baker might be asking, how did McCabe get his key card access for 10 months here as a coach? But no, Doug, I appreciate it. And it's really cool watching everything that Rising Coaches has become. I'm a fan of the show, a fan of everything you guys do. It means a lot. It really does. Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you. And to everybody out there, thank you all for tuning in to another episode of Rising Coaches Podcast. Al Major, Doug Caputo, keep working, keep rising, coaches. Talk to you all soon. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.
Still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.